You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know. Right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth clothing for all types of weather, all types of terrain, all types of budgets. It's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. And now through February 11th, they have a sale site-wide, 20 to 50% off on all the gear on the site. I would check out that Grayling hoodie and the Durham pants. Some of my favorites, definitely what I would be stocking up on if it were me. And yeah, just check them out at huntworthgear.com. Today's podcast, we're talking about our Patreon bear hunt. So we are getting into a bear hunting series. I'm going to go a little bit Western, talking Western bear, spring bear. Got some great guests lined up. And this is kind of the whole reason why. So right here, this podcast is just kind of going, kind of where this started. You've heard me talk about our Patreon group, our Western bear hunt, Bowhunter Chronicles West. We kind of joke about that, but we are doing a Patreon hunt in Montana this year, in addition to what we're doing here in Michigan for our deer camp. And so this is kind of where it all came about. And kind of what our expectations are, what we're looking at, how we're going to approach it, and maybe a reason why we can look back and say why it didn't work out, or it did, or where we went wrong. So, anyways, got to give a huge shout out to our latest patron, Matt Lair. Matt. You know, extremely humbled that he's supporting our show. Matt has the Mobile Hunters Dojo podcast, a very high level hunter, super humble, killed an absolute tank this year. So all that said, you know, Matt, we really appreciate it, and he'll be part of our quarterly giveaways, and I'll send him the information for our Marco Polo group, where we are truly building a community. So I'm going to send that information over there. But if you want to check that out, if you want to be involved with any of our giveaways, I'm still working on our, sponsors, show partners, everything for this year, but I don't think a whole lot's going to change. Giveaways from Latitude, Huntworth, Spartan Forge, Big Shot, Lucky Buck, Kanadi, Zinger, Genesis 3D in the mix, all those, those are some options for us here in the podcast. We don't work with companies who don't give back something to our Patreons. It's just kind of like the way we operate and the companies that we work with. So to get in on giveaways from those great companies, go support those great companies. And yeah, so patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, and enjoy the episode. Thanks. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And I'm not going to lie to you, the next 6 weeks, 6 months, you may or may not like some of the content. And the guy that I'm talking to tonight is 100% to blame for that. It's Tom Taylor. And we're going to get into that. He's been on here a few times. The last time he was in his truck, door dinging and all. And, this time you'll be able to see his, beautiful mug if you go to our YouTube channel. So, what we're doing, if you've listened to the intros and kind of some of the stuff that we've been doing with Patreon, you know, we do our bow hunt, and that came from a turkey hunt that ended up like, hey, we should try to do a deer camp. And there was four of us to do this turkey hunt. And we said, yeah, let's try that. And that four turned into 30, that turned into 50. And, then it turned into, hey, you know, I just moved out to Montana. I really enjoyed your camp. I couldn't come. Do you want to come over and do a bear hunt at my house in Montana? And then we just, like, we were 8 years old, like, Mom, can I go stay at Tom's house? You know, so some of us are packing up and we're heading out west, and we're going to do a bear hunt, a spring bear hunt. And, that sounded pretty accurate, Tom.
I would say I'm not the one to blame. There was, there was a lot of guys in the polo group that were, they started the BHC West camp talk a long time before we had anything really in the plans. And I figured selfishly to keep them out of my elk hunting season that I would offer up bear camp. So,
yeah. And so that's one of the things that, you know, we're going to be talking out about. I've got some really, really great guests lined up to talk with on spring bear hunting and on bear hunting in general. And it honestly was never something that ever interested me. You know, I would see these guys just posting these videos of like, look at my spotting scope and there's a bear over there and he's just this little speck over there and we're going to try and figure out if he's a sow. We're going to do all this stuff. And it just wasn't one of those things that like piqued my interest until we started doing this. And like you said, selfishly to kind of keep people, you know, out of your elk woods. But spring bear for, I think most people isn't something where you're like, man, I'm going to, for a Easterner, like I'm going to take up a bunch of my vacation and I'm going to go chase essentially a predator or a nuisance. You know, in some regards. So it's just like, well, I only got so much vacation. And as we're moving towards this, you know, where guys will talk about point creep and they talk about, you know, I mean, look what Wyoming did for the cost of a tag, right? An out of state elk tag, you know, it's getting expensive for the tags to go out west. The draws are taking longer. There's more hunters in the woods, and that's fine. Like, I'm not Matt Ranella, like, you're at my trailhead. I'm just saying, right. It's getting more and more difficult to plan a hunt, you know, to actually plan a hunt, where these bear hunts, over-the-counter tag, it's not very expensive. It's a beautiful time of year if you time it right. It's nice, yeah. Nice down low, up high it can be cold and nasty or whatever. So the more that I'm like starting to research it, I'm starting to feel like, when I first started, like when we first started the podcast and when we were going out west for the first time, and like some of the guys in our Patreon group that are heading out there, like, what boots do I get? Like, what tent do I get? Like, what do I get for a pack? kind of getting reinvigorated. And is that what you kind of had in mind when you, you know, you said, well, let's do a bear camp. And then had you bear hunted in the spring out west before?
No, it was never on my radar. Like I would have never, you know, it was kind of, it was never on my radar when I lived in Michigan. Springtime was turkey season. You chase birds around. And, you know, you did some scouting, did some fishing, and it was never something I would have ever thought about. You know, me and my buddies had kind of thought about maybe going to Canada and doing a fly-in trip or something like that one of these days type thing. But shooting a bear over bait just never got my – I can see the fun of it, and I have zero issues with it. That's not where it's coming from. But it just never really got my blood – pumping. You know, it just was kind of like one of those things where I was like, if I was going to do one of those flying trips like that, I'd probably spend just as much time catching and eating walleye as I would, you know, a hunting bear. And I think some of the part of it too was like, I started putting in for bear points in Michigan, and some of the attractiveness to that was knowing that, you know, you were going to bait and you were going to put a lot of time and effort into it. And I could see some of that had a draw to me. You know, going up there and finding your spots and doing all your research and then running your baits. And it's a lot of work. And, there was some draw there because it was so much work. But it just never really, you know, I always just would end up chasing turkeys around. And then when we moved out here, there are no turkeys by me, and a lot of bears. So it kind of just made sense. Like last year was my first year ever bear hunting in my entire life. And just getting out there and chasing them around, doing a spot and stalk, I was like, okay, this is different. This is a lot of fun. You know, it's a great time to be out in the mountains. Like I said, it can be nasty. Last year was a brutal spring. We had a lot of snow and all the way through April. So it made it really tough, but you're seeing parts of the mountain that you wouldn't necessarily go to. You're looking at different things. And as soon as I did it, I was like, the heck with trying to find turkeys over here. I'm going to be spring bear from here on out. And then when the guys started talking about, you know, like we should do a BHC West hunt and all this kind of stuff, I just, in my head, I was thinking, you know, selfishly, like I said, I don't mind having guys out to, you know, go elk hunt and all that kind of stuff, you know, jokingly. But it's a really good way for guys to not mess up their whitetail season, to, you know, go do a Western style hunt. Nobody out here is going to care if you're out here chasing bears around. You know, everybody wants the bear numbers knocked down. They need to be managed. And it just seemed like a really easy way for guys to dip their toes into a Western style hunt without breaking the bank on an elk tag if they've never done it before, and all the gear and yada, yada. And we're going to, you know, the gear they're going to need is going to be extremely limited because the way we're going to hunt, you know, we'll be here at the house. It's not like we're going to need everything for the backcountry. So it would be a really, really good entry point for guys to dip their toes into a Western style hunt. That's not going to break their bank, not going to need a ton of gear. And they're also going to, you know, possibly be able to do this for years to come with their buddies somewhere else, somewhere in a different state, wherever. And not mess their whitetail season up. So that's kind of what was running through my head.
So being out there for the first time doing your first elk hunt, your bear hunt rather, What do you think, guys who have who've never been out west, who've never been in the mountains or whatever, can learn from it? And why would it be a good way to dip your toes into elk hunting? Because we're talking different time of year, different style of hunting. You know, you're not going to learn calling. You're not going to learn any of that stuff. You know, because I have done, you know, the hiking elk hunt and the get dropped off on horseback and spike camp rifle hunt. And the two are way, way different. I mean, they're not, they're not calling, they're not bugling. I mean, I'm already planning for the next trip where we do that spike camp again, of like how I'm going to set up, and I'm going to have to just, I mean, it's almost going to be like whitetail hunting, like trying to pinch them down, like where I saw these elk and how they use the terrain versus that elk calling and all that stuff. So from your first hunt, like what did you learn, and what should guys, why should a bear hunt be on their radar to try and move them forward in a Western way?
Yeah. And I don't think the objective was ever to like move them into elk hunting or deer hunting. Mostly like, you know, affordable trip in the spring to knock the snow off their boots and go chase something around in the spring. But you know, it definitely is, it's going to be a good way for guys to, you know, they're going to go from looking at the map at country they've never, ever seen before, to seeing it in person, and it's gonna show them just what the country looks like and what to expect. They're gonna see how big the country actually is versus what it looks like on the map. They're gonna be able to tell what's realistic to get to, what's not realistic to get to, what the Forest Service roads look like compared to what they look like on the map, what the trails, the ATV use, all that stuff. They're gonna realize how hard it is to hike up a hill for a long period of time after you've been sitting on the couch all winter. And I mean, it's just stuff like that, you know, how your feet do, and the boots you got. It's, you know, be able to test your gear out a little bit, and it's just going to be a completely different thing for somebody that's coming from the Midwest that's never been in the mountains. And not to mention, just, I mean, you know this firsthand from going to Idaho elk hunting, the pure beauty of it. I mean, not to sound dramatic, but it is. I mean, it's a beautiful place to hunt, you know. The Rocky Mountains from Mexico to Canada are pretty gorgeous. Every stretch, you know, every single mile from Mexico to Canada are pretty gorgeous. So there's just a lot of opportunity there. And for guys like me, you know, that are on a budget and can only plan so much time, so many hunts in a year, it's just a good way to get them out in the spring when they don't have a ton of other stuff planned. You know, go see some new stuff, new country. Plus it just builds woodsmanship. You know, the more stuff you see, the more experiences you have, the more times you fail, the more times you learn, you know, the better you get at just being a better all around hunter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. So we've been talking about this for a very long time, it seems like, now at this point.
Yeah.
And when you put those maps, when you shared the maps on kind of like what you were looking at, I had almost the same feeling of like when we stepped out of the truck in Idaho and like got, like, you know, you go up that first ridge. And I bet you we weren't a quarter of the mile from the truck. And I just stopped and had the realization, like, holy shit, what do I do now? You know, and I'm
right.
We're yeah. 15 minutes into a 10-11 day hunt, right? And, you know, so you shared those maps, and I can kind of look at a map now and say, okay, this is, you know, with elk, like there's very specific things that I'm looking for. Right. And I kind of feel comfortable looking at that, but where we were at was way different than what you showed. I mean, you're showing these glassing points or whatever that have, you know, 6, 8, 10 draws in them, like really tight terrain, it looked like. And I was like, how do you, you know, I can't, yeah. You can't hike every single one of those. You can't, there's no way, you know? So that's when I had to like go to the YouTube machine and say, okay, I got to see what the, where these guys are going, like what it looks like, what they're glassing, you know, and when you see them sitting on the side of the logging road, you know, kind of like when I first started watching like some of the born and raised stuff and their height, you know, a lot of it's in, you know, steep timber and stuff like that, but a lot of stuff they're buzzing down these roads, calling, looking down into some of these clear cuts and stuff like that. And so to be able to associate those two things, we're like kind of that gut punch again, you know, right. even for me. So I can't imagine the guys that have,
it was for me too. You know, I was in the same boat. Yeah. You know, it's there's a lot of country to look at out here, and you know, obviously the, you know, your odds tend to go up the further away from pressure you get, the deeper you get, but we also have to be realistic too. You know, with the base camp area and how far in. But even so, just from the freeway, you know, I pull over on the shoulder of the freeway all the time, and I'm always blasting up game. And I mean, we had a black bear just on the outskirts of town last spring. You know, he was walking around. He was there for 2 or 3 days. We had so much snow, it had all those bears down on private land. The first part of spring there, and it had one of them pushed right down here right next to town in a little park where people walk their dogs and ride their bikes. So you know, they just,
join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
You know, I think it sounds kind of stupid. It's, you know, a lot of people say it about elk and deer and whatever, but it's, you know, find a bear where they're at. The only thing to do is get out there and look. So it's just going to be a lot of that front country stuff that we're hunting, a lot of driving, a lot of looking, a lot of short hikes looking. You know, we may dive into a spot that if I get, you know, when I get out there and do some scouting, I'll look for some areas where if I find a spot that money and we want to dive into it, we'll dive into it. But we're going to be late in the season, so they're going to be spread out. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be a gimme, but there's a lot of bears over here. And I think we got a pretty good shot at knocking a couple of them down. So,
and that's one of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit too, is like, I feel like when, so I'm kind of coming around on this to think that, you know, maybe when you spend a bunch of money to go hunt out of state, like you should always have the goal of like killing or bust, right? But I think, you know, in a way, this hunt, and spring bear in general, it isn't necessarily, at least maybe that's the way you sold it, because you wanted your buddies to come out, but I talked with at ATA with the working class bow hunter guys about this very thing, and they said, you know, as much as it is a bear hunt, you know, you're kind of have like a bear camp, so you don't have to get up early, you're sitting around, you know, somebody's cooking breakfast, you're doing that, you're spending, you know, a good portion of the day, you know, shed hunting or scouting, glassing, you know, just checking out country, maybe you're fishing or something, and then you're hunting, you know, you're really trying to get on a bear just that evening hunt. So there's a lot of time spent in camp, a lot of, you know, it's just a fun experience, bears aside, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of like what you kind of had in mind, you know, putting this thing together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of why that's one of the reasons I leaned towards a bear hunt too, is because, you know, an archery elk hunt is hard enough when you live out here. But when you're traveling out of state and you got a limited amount of time, you are getting after it hard. And not to say we're not going to get after it hard here, but the rifle bear hunting, or a spot and stalk bear hunting, it just kind of, it lends itself a little bit more to that camp atmosphere. You know, get a big breakfast in you, get all your gear around, and then hit it hard for the rest of the day. And, you know, that's tough to do on an archery elk hunt or any type of elk hunt. It's because you're just grinding so hard and you're really covering a lot of miles. And I think, you know, when it comes to bear hunting, you could do that too. I mean, you certainly could do that. But I think it just lends itself, and the tag's a little bit easier to chew on, you know, for a non-resident. I think it's 350 versus, you know, 1100 or whatever it is now. So, it's a little less to chew on if you don't, you know, take it over the top serious. So,
yeah. And so for you coming from kind of that angle and having your first season under your belt, you're the resident expert at spot and stalk bear hunting, right?
Yeah.
So what has your experience been as far as, you know, strategy or whatever? Because you can watch and see all these guys, and, you know, I feel like there's like, if you're watching videos, right, there's not a lot. This probably just shows like our naivete as far as like what we're doing, right? But there isn't
100%.
There isn't a lot of like out of state DIY spring bear hunt videos. It's usually like guys that are going like way back in the back country that have an idea, and they're gonna get places where nobody's ever been, or these bears, you know, there's a lot of bears because people don't go back there, or you've got people who live out there and they kind of pattern these bears all year. They just know where the bears hang out. So they're going to put the time in with the odds. Now for you, you know, just being out there and all that stuff, like what's the balance between like just sitting and glassing, saying like, there's gotta be a bear up there. There's lots of green, there's lots of food, you know, there's gotta be one in there. And then doing the like, born and raised elk hunting, like we're just gonna burn gravel until we run into something,
right? Yeah. You're asking the wrong guy. I didn't even see a bear in season last year. I saw more bears when I was out kayaking with the kids and fishing than I ever did during season. So yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the balance is. I think it's going to be a lot of, let's just trust our gut and take a census and what do we want to do tomorrow type thing. And I think it also depends on too, like the country we're getting into. If we find a spot where all of us are just like, this feels right, this looks good. Like if somebody sat here long enough, they're going to see a bear.
Because of our vast bear knowledge.
Yeah, no, I just think exactly. I don't know what that looks like. You know, maybe we'll. I'm just kind of hoping we notice it when we see it. I don't know, man. I think what's going to happen is we're going to take off to a spot. We're going to burn some gravel. We're going to go find some spots to sit in glass. We're going to get sick of that pretty quick. And then we're just going to go hit the calls real hard. And to be completely honest with you, I think, with us hunting the front country like this, and without exhausting the guys too hard, really stacking the miles on, I honestly think the calling game in the country that's around me is pretty heavily timbered. It's fairly steep country. In some areas, it's really steep. And there's a lot of stuff to look at that you can see from the road, and you can put a lot of miles on and be pretty effective that way. But man, you could really easily, get a lot of setups and call setups in a day. And I honestly think some of this thicker country behind me that doesn't have a lot of good glassing stuff, it's just really thick, nasty stuff. I honestly think we could bury ourselves in there and really, have some pretty, our odds are going to be pretty good, I think, at the calling. I don't know why I feel like that. It's not coming off of any type of experience. I have zero clue. It just seems like the terrain lends itself to some of those areas for, you know, setting up the calling.
So that brings in a whole nother, the elephant in the room, right? What's the grizzly situation, out there?
Yeah. The areas that I kind of showed you guys on the map, I haven't seen a ton of grizzly sign in there. I haven't seen much grizzly sign. So
have you tried calling them?
Address? No, never done that. you know, track around in a lot of it. And I would never put guys in a position where I thought they had a high likelihood of calling in a grumpy one, you know. So, but you always just got to be ready for it, you know. I don't know as if I'd go in a place where I knew there was, you know, some of these spots not too far from me. I don't know as if I would go into that area and call. I don't think that would be my technique for some of those spots, because I think you've got a bit of a likelihood of calling in a whoopsie, you know. And it's not going to be something that you're going to want to do solo, in my opinion. I think it takes the brass tacks. It takes the brass balls to go into an area where you know there's a decent grizzly population, or there's grizzly sign in there. And then you set up, start calling. I think you're probably asking for some trouble, especially being by yourself.
So for you, you know, we touched on a little bit of gear and the gear being just saying that it's kind of easy to come by, but we've also talked a lot about, glassing, right? And you've done a ton of Western hunting, like prior to moving out to Montana. And, that's kind of what brought you to Montana, honestly. Right. So for a regular Eastern whitetail guy who's going to make one or two trips a year, you know, maybe a trip every other year, out west, you know, budget in mind, all that stuff. You know, if you talk to quote unquote real Western hunters or the guys that are into it, you know, you need Swarovskis, you need Zeiss, you need, and you need, you know, an $8,000 spotter and all this stuff. What is the glass that you're running on a regular basis, and what is sufficient?
Yeah. So if you're the type of guy that's picking out a trophy animal, a really, really high quality piece of glass is going to save you a lot of boot. If you're counting inches, you're counting tines, you're picking out, you know, you're trying to really, you know, figure out if it's a giant bear or not, you're going to want some quality glass. For the style of hunting my wife and I do, it just needs to be legal. That's all we need to know. And we're going. So I'm not spending $1,000 on a pair of Swarovski to know whether or not I'm going to make a move on a bull that I can see his antlers on his head, you know. So, I mean, and especially for this spring bear hunt, you just got to know it's a bear and it doesn't have cubs with it. That's all you got to know. And I'm not trying to, you know, talk guys out of buying this glass if that's what they want to do and it's in your budget, go for it. I mean, buy once, cry once, by all means. But you got to be realistic with what you're using the glass for. If that's the thing that's breaking your budget and you're only going to come out west a couple times and you're not, you're looking for inches and all that stuff, it's not needed. You're better off, putting the money into a good quality pair of boots or a nice comfortable backpack or something like that. It's just not, and especially like on this bear hunt, I don't think any of the guys that are coming out here are going to go, that bear's too small. You know, I don't think anybody's ready to come out here and shoot a cub, but all you got to know is if it's a sow with cubs and they're, you just wait and watch, do your due diligence before you shoot and make sure she doesn't have cubs in tow, or it's a bear. That's all you need to know. You know, it's not like you got to be picking out, the hair on its hide. So
in that instance, though, I mean, one of the things that I've heard, and I've even heard like from my brother who hunts a bunch, like spot and stock whitetail, in South Dakota out that way. He talks about, one of the guys has a pair of high end saguaros or something. And when he had like lesser binoculars, like not HD binoculars or, whatever, he's like, eye fatigue is real.
It can be.
And so that's one of the things like, and so do you have a spotter? Like, do you run a spotting scope or?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. And so like which version, like what is it that you have? Cause I have one I bought, I've got, $1,000 binoculars and I got a $300 spotting scope, and I'd much rather look through my 10 power binoculars than my, 60 power spotter,
Yeah. No, spotting scopes, in my opinion, for the style of hunting that I do, that I just kind of talked about a little bit. It's like one of those things, you see something with your binoculars that's so far away that you can't really tell if it's, you can't tell if it's a bull or not. You see an elk or something like that. You're like, okay, is that a legal buck? Is that a legal bull? And it's a long ways away and you're trying to figure out if you're going to commit and go over there and take a look. Then you throw the spotter up, take a closer look at them. There's a lot of guys that do, but I don't spend a ton of time behind the spot and scope, and you will get eye fatigue from the spot and scope for sure. They're not as easy and as comfortable to look through as a set of binoculars. I would tell guys, instead of spending the money on a spotting scope, buy a tripod for your binoculars. That'll make a world of difference, versus having a spot and scope. So, a pair of like Diamondback binoculars or something equivalent, not the Multascos, nothing like that. You're not going to want those. But if you get a good pair of like 10x42, 10x50, or even an 8-power, but something equivalent to like to a Diamondback or a Viper, that's really all you're going to need. With spot and scopes, that's one of the things that if you are going to purchase it and you do think that you're going to want it, you're going to need it, you really want to pay attention to weight. That's one huge factor with spot scope. Some of the HD spotting scopes out there, if you start looking at the ounces of them, they are super heavy. And if you're carrying that thing around all day and you're really putting a lot of miles on, you will notice that thing's in your backpack. So that's something you want to watch for. And that's definitely one of those things where you want to start to, a cheap spotting scope, in my opinion, is absolutely worthless. Because they're almost impossible to use, focus on, try to figure anything out better than. So if you were to get a spotting scope, I'd say to try to get up into a bit of a better model. Leopold has like a, or their what is it, their VX5 series glass or whatever. Their higher end like HD scopes are, you can get a decent scope for under $1,000. But like I say, for this hunt in particular, I don't think it's needed. You know, you're better off buying a nice head tripod for your binoculars than you are spending a ton of money on glass, in my opinion.
Well, and I'm asking the question for, you know, I mean, you're kind of speaking to like the people that are going on this hunt, but, you know, as we all do, and I mean, you've been bit just as much as I have. When you start to be like, all right, like if you and I decided, you know what, we really like the Jim Ackout stuff. Like we're going to go hunt black bears in Alaska. We're going to go on the, like the little Delta or wherever they go and just walk up and down these creeks. Both of us own all of the gear that it takes to do that. But we would certainly be like, oh, we got to have this because we're going to Alaska.
Yeah.
Like we, you know, there's that type of thing where, you know, if, and I think one thing as like a Western, like whitetail hunter, like a Midwestern whitetail hunter, right? Like the first day that we were in our elk camp in Colorado, like we were glassing up elk, like with our 10 power binos a mile away across this big ravine. Right.
Yeah.
And you'd say, if you would, and granted it had just snowed and all this stuff, so it was very easy to pick out movement and then figure it out. But like, if you were to go like some of the spots that we hunt in Ohio or like probably some of the spots you were in Kansas and you had those same 10 power binoculars, you just said, there is no freaking way that I'm going to be able to see a mile with these binoculars. It's not possible. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, in our minds, we think that, you know, we see it on TV. These guys get all this stuff for free or, you know, they got to use it. Like I have to have crispy boots, you know, everybody has crispies. I need crispies. Like, well, not necessarily. You need good boots, but they don't have to, they don't have to be made in Italy. So, you know, that's, you know, like I said, you're kind of talking about like this specific hunt, this thing, you're talking to a specific person. And I just wanted to like kind of clarify that, you know, as if you're listening to this and you're being like, man, I'd like to.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. In wild country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You know, start looking into this Western hunting thing, like any type of Western hunting thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it applies all the way across the board. And until you get out there and figure out, like, what you're lacking, you know, like you said, you know, you could spend that same money that you'd spend on a cheap spotting scope that you're going to not want to use, like the one that I have that is just, you know, just like it's just a big old weight on something that, you know, doesn't weigh as much, that it's going to be more versatile. You could use it in a bunch of different applications and you could spend that extra money on another $100. And I think the guy from Outdoorsman said it best, you know, that extra $100 or whatever is going to go way further on a pair of binoculars than it is, you know, somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. If you were thinking, you know, oh, okay, I got to budget myself here and get a lower mid range quality binocular and then a lower mid range spotting scope, I'd tell you to go with the high dollar. You know, I'd put all that money all day. I rarely, my spot and scope usually is in the truck, and it goes in my backpack sometime. But it's not with me very often, and I do not pull it out and use it a ton. It's, you know, I'd way rather have better binoculars than I would, you know, half-ass both of them. And you'll find yourself, once you get a really, really nice pair of binoculars or a decent pair of binoculars, because I never took binoculars with me white tail in Michigan. And then, you know, I got a pair of Diamondbacks to take out west when we started going back out west hunting. And I'm like, I got to do something different than this, you know, Tascos that I'm using or whatever, you know, that never got used. And they were like impossible to use. Getting focus, all that stuff. And as soon as I bought a pair of decent binoculars, like those Diamondbacks or you know, the equivalent in the other brand, they're not bad, you know. And they're a huge step up from them crappy old Tascos that everybody had. And as soon as you get a pair, you're like, oh, I can use these. And I use them a lot now, you know. And I, you know, ever since then, they went with me everywhere, you know, whitetail hunting and everything I did. They went with me turkey hunting, and they do make a big difference. And it's the same with the boots. As soon as I bought a good, high-quality pair of hiking boots, I would find myself wearing those way more than I would wear my muck boots. And especially if I was going to be on, you know, a type of hunt where I knew I was going to put the miles on, I was going to be scouting a lot and hunting my way in somewhere, I'd way rather, you know, put the miles on a good quality pair of hiking boots versus a pair of muck boots. So, you know, a lot of this gear and stuff that I was getting, it really does surprise you how much it transitions back over into the Midwest. You find yourself using it quite a bit.
So I feel like we could talk about boots all day. And I'm going to ask you some questions about that off to the side, because, you know, there's different styles of boots. You know, do you need a mountaineering boot? Do you need these boots? And God, just coming back from ATA, like there's no shortage of different styles of boots, and you see what everybody's wearing, right, and like what they're used for. But I think we've said it on here before, you know, the quote from my good buddy, Eric Nelson, who was the guy with the longbow? That is a man. That guy is a man, big Paul Bunyan, Tom Taylor running around Michigan backwoods with a longbow, you know, and, you know, this hunt, you know, you're recommending, and probably the majority of the hunt is going to be, you know, a rifle hunt. So for you growing up the way that you did, you know, like compound bows were the devil. Fred Bear is the first influencer, and he's not a real hunter.
I wouldn't go that far.
You said it, not me.
He was the first influencer, I will say that.
So to then be like, all right, we're gonna do this with a rifle and this sort of stuff, and you had you know, alluded to the fact, or you were talking about how you really enjoyed that spot and stock aspect of it and things like that. So I mean, we're here, like I said, if you don't like the content, Tom Taylor, on Instagram, look him up. But a gun hunt, you know, how hard was that to swallow? Or was it just like, you know what, you know what I mean? The decision. 'Cause like I said, when I think about you and anybody that's a, you know, a traditional bow hunter, you know, I guess in the capacity that you are, like I don't see them very often with a modern rifle in their hand.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there like that, but I've said it a bunch of times before, but, I'm pretty equal opportunity weapons, or I don't, you know, the traditional gear when I was growing up, it was traditional. I mean, that's all it was. I cannot tell you how many trophy class animals that have walked by me and not got an arrow in them because of that stick that was in my hand, you know, you firsthand have seen how hard it is, you know. So, you know, as I got a little bit older and a little bit less time to hunt, had a family to worry about and all that kind of stuff, it's, you know, it got to the point where it was just silly to me to pigeonhole myself into just one weapon and one style of hunting. And guns are fun, you know. Guns are fun too. So I'm not gonna sugarcoat it and say that this isn't gonna be a hard hunt even with a rifle. And you and I both know there is a completely different celebration level when you shoot something with a gun versus with a bow. And I don't necessarily think that has to do with the delivery mechanism. I think it has to do with the effort that was put into the hunt. And I think there can be a lot of gun hunts out there and a lot of compound hunts and a lot of traditional hunts that will give you the same kind of excitement. It's just going to come in different ways. You know, we both have had a doe walk underneath us that we weren't going to shoot. And, you know, you've had 50 does around you for the last 5 days. One walks underneath and you're like, you know what? I'm going to shoot that thing. And you don't get the same excitement out of it as you do if you were, you know, you had a target buck in mind or you had an area where you're really trying to pin this buck down and then it actually came through for you. It's a different thing. It has nothing to necessarily do with the weapon. It has to do with the road you took to get there. So that's where I'm at with it. I don't, you know, when I was growing up, there was some gun hunting going on. But it was pretty minimal. And, it was mostly for filling the freezer, you know, later in the season. And that's pretty, I mean, that's kind of still what it is, but I like to be in the woods hunting. That's all there is to it. And, you know, I don't really care what's in paint. I'll pick and choose what weapon I'm using based off of what feels good that day.
What's interesting about what you just said? Now, I really like that kind of explanation, not for me, like, you need to explain yourself or whatever. But just simply like, as hunters, coming from the place of like, I like being in the outdoors, but I also like killing stuff. And I like, you know, sometimes you need meat for the freezer. And the easiest way to do that is go out and whack some does with a rifle, you know?
Right. Yeah. 100%.
And you're happy, you know, 'cause you got meat, you know, you killed something, you had a successful hunt, but it just feels a lot different. But I think I would also, you know, in this situation and also like in our deer camp, right? I was thinking you were going to go a little bit different route there and say, instead of like the effort that you put in, like kind of like the circumstances or like who you're with, because the celebration to me is a lot different when I got some people to share it with, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I don't think I said effort, did I? I think the road you took to get there. I don't think I said effort.
At the beginning, I think you said like how difficult it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't mean it that way. I mean, yeah, when things are harder and you accomplish them, it feels better for sure. But, it's, yeah, what I meant when I said it's the road you took to get there. It's just, I mean, perfect example is watching guys up at your Patreon hunt in Michigan shoot fawns, you know. I'm not picking on anybody, Joe, but it, you know, guys up in Michigan, you know, the guys are ready to just, it's a completely different road you're on. It's not the same what you've been doing all year long, all early season long. You know, you're grinding, you're scouting, you're trying to find a buck, you know, that you want to, you're excited about chasing. And it's just a completely different path. You're on a completely different path. You're with all these guys just want to skin some deer, you know? And yeah, it's just, you know, that's like, that's kind of what I meant about the road it takes to get there, is it's not necessarily about the weapon you're using. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get there to that same peak level of excitement.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
Awesome.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
So, as a hunting community or as like hunters, that's one of the things that we're losing. But I always go back to the like, I just don't feel that same way. Like, I have a hard time embracing, like, I don't even know maybe that's a problem, is that, like, there isn't, I was going to say crossbow culture, but I don't think there is a culture of crossbows. Like, I think that's, like, to me, the bastard of hunting. Like, it's not bow hunting. It's not gun hunting. You know,
and
that's the thing, but I understand, like, as hunters, you know, and when we go up and do our rifle camp with the kids, and, you know, I really, really enjoy that. And
yeah,
it's fun, you know, to see the kids involved.
It's because it's not about the weapon,
but if we were to put crossbows in everybody's hands, I don't know that I would.
You'd still have a good time.
I don't know. I'm not the one to defend crossbow.
I'm not the one to defend crossbow, honey. That's not where this is coming from. But it's what I'm trying to say, I guess, is, you know, and honestly, with a lot of the calling that we plan on doing, and I think a guy could bring a bow out here and have a great time, you know. And he could probably even spot and stalk something. I mean, there's guys that do it. You know, there are guys that do it. So it's not like it's an impossible task. But I, you know, it's just about it's. And I think the reason why there's not like a culture behind crossbow hunting is because I think it's really based around archery season is what it is. And, you know, archery season is supposed to be the reason that season there is because you've limited the effectiveness of the equipment. And the reason why there is kind of a brotherhood there and that culture of, you know, brotherhood around archery is because it's difficult to do. It's difficult to get good at. It's difficult to put it in the right spot. And when you take that away, it's not really meant to be in archery season. That's my opinion, is crossbow should not be in archery season because you've now increased the effectiveness of this equipment so much. You know, the reason that season there is because it limits how many deer can get killed and it limits how effective you are. And as soon as you strip that away, you've now got basically a gun out there that's not as hard to master. And that's why I think there's no culture behind crossbow hunting, is because, you know, you've lost kind of that purpose of what you're trying to do in the first place.
I can see that, I suppose. But like I say, it was very interesting for you to be like, all right, well, this is what we're going to do. Like, you're going to hunt, you know, elk with a bow, you're gonna, you know, I mean, we drive all the way across the country, we spend thousands and thousands of dollars to hunt these animals with a bow and take, you know, weeks and weeks off, and then, like I said, you of all people, you're like, yeah, let's come gun hunting for some bears. Like, it was just one of those things. And, you know, I think the same thing could be said for the podcast. You know, we're hunting turkeys, we're you know, we're trying to do everything that we can. I'm running around this stupid stick bow, and that's just for me. And then
right.
To be like, all right, well, we're going to go try and shoot a bear. But I guess there's that other thing. And it's like, you wouldn't know what to do with it if you did get there. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing bear hunting. And that's going to be the fun part, is the learn as right. you go. And, you know, when you talk about the bow hunting for bears, the calling for bears, that spot and stalk on bears, for this group of ragtag Easterners, you know, that's like saying I'm not shooting a buck until I get a booner in front of me, you know.
Right.
Got to get a couple under your belt, you know. And
yeah, I mean, the difficulty level of it is already there. You know, it's not easy, especially, you know, with us not being good at bear and not really knowing what we're doing. And then we're also, you know, we don't know exactly. It's not like I have a spot where I'm like, oh, this place holds bears. We're going to get some stalks with our bows. Like, we already have a lot of hurdles in front of us. So let's just knock some bears down and, you know, and set some gunpowder off, you know. But I mean, if guys wanted to bring their bows out, I'll be the first guy right there next to them with a bow. You know, I don't give a crap. I'll be right there with them.
I would say, you know, I picture the whole calling thing with a bow. Like every stick bow brown bear hunt you've ever seen, where the, you know, I just picture like Tread Barter, right? Walking up the little logging road up to this brown bear and the guy right behind him with the slug gun, you know, like,
yeah,
like yeah. I would much rather if I was the bow guy, that you be like the gun guy. Don't yeah. be right next to me yeah. with a bow. That's a terrible plan.
Yeah.
But so, you know, when we went out to Idaho that first time, you know, we had a goal in mind, right? So it was, you know, we want to hear an elk, see an elk, get an opportunity, and then anything past that is going to be like a bonus. But that's kind of like how we stepped it up. So realistically, mm-hmm. To set goals for this hunt, and the same way that I would tell people who were just starting to mobile hunt or that were just starting to deer hunt, is, you know, maybe you need to like remember your arrows, Robbie. Maybe you need to, you know, not make any noise and get set up clean. Maybe you need to just see a deer. Maybe you just need, I mean, and that's right. the same thing that I'm going through with my trad bow journey, right? So like this year I got drawn, this year I shot at one and everything all went to shit, but right. those are wins, right? So
yep.
there are the guys that say, well, you know, it's kill something or bust. Like, where would you set your benchmarks here for this hunt?
Yeah. So my goal is for every single person to panic and try to figure out how to get a bear hide back to Michigan without it slipping. So that's, or back Midwest without it slipping. That's my goal. And if guys don't want to, if guys want to take it easy and they want to chill and they don't want to go that hard, then by all means, they can tell me that. But my goal is up here. Like, we're gonna hit it hard, and I expect everybody on this hunt to see a bear and get an opportunity to put a stalk on. Realistically, if we can get, you know, depending on the amount of guys we got out here and how many groups, you know, what size group we're hunting in and what we decide we wanted. Realistically, if we can hit that 25 to 30% mark, I would feel like we really achieved something. Especially with it being a little bit later in the season. We don't have a ton of snow this year, so the bears are going to be spread out pretty thin. That would be awesome if we could reach that goal, you know, 25-30%. And also everybody just have a really, really good time, you know, because that's what all these camps are about. Is, you and I both know that hunting for yourself and hunting in a camp are two completely different things. The atmosphere is different. It feels different. The goals are different. But, you know, I think you would have to be the type of person that's miserable in every type of situation in your entire life to not come out and have a good time. Like, you're going to have a good time, and it's going to be as good of a time as you want it to be. And it can be as hard as you can hit it as hard as you want to be. But I really do think that we're going to get a bear on the ground, if not two or three of them on the ground. And I'm really hoping that everybody gets a chance to see some, put a stalk on it. The icing on the cake would be to have some bonker call-in situations where shit just goes absolutely nuts. And then we all stand around at camp that night and tell the story. And yeah, he was over here. And the next thing, you know, I don't know what the hell was going on. That would be an absolute blast. So that's what I'm hoping for.
So just one more thing to kind of close this out. Because I don't know if we should have like led with this or whatever. I know it may be like a no-no for, you know, I'm not going to say like, oh, this is where we're hunting or whatever. But what is the bear tag situation in Montana? Like, is it
Montana's
units? Is it, you know, anything like that? Or how does it work?
Yeah, it's real easy, to find. Most of Montana, I think. I know the western half is open to black bear. No baiting. It's all spot and stalk. There is some hound hunting. You do have to get a license or permit. And they limit those quite a bit. They only give out a few hound permits per unit. But it's all over the counter. And all spot stock, no baiting. So pretty much the entire state is open to black bear hunting where you can find a black bear.
Okay. Yeah.
I believe I haven't looked at the eastern side of Montana, but the whole western half is pretty much wide open.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I just wanted to kind of clear that up for guys who are listening and being like, if they made it this far and they're like, well, what's the deal? You know, what's the tag situation?
Just
wanted to kind of clarify that. That was really fun for me, you know, going to ATA this year and like already having this like in the books, essentially, to be like, okay, how can I integrate some of this stuff into what we're going to do? And, you know, what am I looking at? How is this going to help me or, you know, whatever. So I just, you know, I really appreciate you doing this. And, you know, like I said, if it goes anything like what happened with the Michigan hunt, you're going to have, you know, 7-8 guys this year. And then next year you're going to have 25. So.
Right. That's great. That's great. No, I think it'll be a lot of fun. And, I would hope, you know, this turns into an every year thing because, you know, I told myself moving out here that I was going to try to continue on some of that camp tradition, or help, you know, rebuild that as much as I could. And because I think it's really important. I think it's something we're losing, especially with social media. I think guys get so sick of just seeing the same social media stuff, YouTube stuff over and over and over. And I really do think that just, you know, whatever camp you're going to, whitetail, elk, bear, whatever your freaking camp, I think it's a really good reset button for guys. And I think it's really, really needed in the hunting world now. You pick up a lot of just little tidbits from guys that you would never think you can't get from social media and you can't get from YouTube videos. We're losing a lot of that generational knowledge and little tips and tricks and all that kind of stuff. We're losing a lot of that, you know, by not having these camps. So I think it's something that's really important, and I would hope in the future, this is something, you know, this could go one or two ways. Like you said, this could turn into something. I don't think it will, you know. It's a big trip for guys. You know, they got families, they got spring break coming up, the kids are getting out of school, they got all these plans, the holidays, spring is a busy time of the year. So it's even though it's not wrecking their whitetail hunt back in the Midwest, it's still a tough trip to swing for a lot of guys. So I don't ever see this getting as big as your camp there in Michigan, because it's just different, you know. But I do think this is going to turn into something where, and I would hope this turns into something where we got some core group of guys, or you know, and some newcomers coming in, and this turns into something where eventually if we do want to do more of a remote camp or a backcountry camp or something like that, it's a lot less of a hurdle for guys to get over, because they're gonna see the country, they're gonna know what they're doing a little bit more, they're gonna be, you know, a little bit ready for something like that. So you know, who knows where it's gonna go. Maybe that's where it goes. Maybe next year, or 3 years from now, or 5 years from now, I'm packing 10 guys into the backcountry with llamas, and we got a nice, big, cool backcountry camp, and we get after it. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, and for you, it's pretty easy because it's just beta testing for, packing people in for elk hunts. Yep. So, yeah, I really appreciate it. And for everybody listening, like I said, that's kind of where we're going with this content here the next few weeks. Like I said, I got some pretty good guests lined up to kind of help us on this journey, but at least we've got this on record, as this is where our baseline was, so we can go back and say, man, we were dumb, we didn't know anything. So Tom, as always, appreciate you having you on, and looking forward to seeing where this thing goes as well.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, buddy.